Welcome to Pocket Toyed. You have to now select a version. You can either select Pokemon. God damn it. All right, let's start. Let me take another stab at that.
Yeah, okay.
I'll wait for you. Let's wait for you to stop. Let me know when you're good to go.
All right, go ahead.
Welcome to Pocket Toyed. We're trying something new out. You now have to pick a version. You can either pick Pokemon Past, where you have Professor Addison.
You said Pokemon again.
Did I?
Yeah.
It's not worth going back and listening, but I swear to God, I said Pocket Toyed.
No, you did it. You said Pokemon.
God damn it. Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Welcome to Pocket Toyed, where you now have to choose a version. You can either choose Pocket Toyed Past and get Professor Addison, and that's me. You can follow me on the internet at Addison_L, or you can get the Pokemon slightly, just ever so slightly more past. God damn it, you're right. I did do it again. Oh my God. I really thought that was the one.
All right. One more time.
All right. If I fuck it up again, then we're just going to go with it. And like, feel free to call it out, but I don't care. We'll just go with it.
All right.
Are you ready? Are you done?
Ready. Oh, I'm ready.
Welcome to Pocket Toyed, where you now have to choose a version. You can either get Pocket Toyed Past and get Professor Addison, and you can follow me on the internet at Addison_L, or you can choose Pocket Toyed just a little bit more past and get a more handsome professor.
It's me, Jordan. Holy shit, this intro, you did it. I'm so proud of you.
I did it. A little peek behind the curtain. This was take four.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jackal27 or at CRT Pixels if you would like to follow my currently inactive, more popular account.
You can follow the show at Pocket Toyed, where you can find a link to our Discord server, which we've had a few new people jump in, and we always like seeing that because everybody in there is just very nice and wholesome, and it's a good place. And I don't think anyone has joined that server and regretted it. That's all I'm saying. And if you would like, we do have a Ko-fi page, and you can go to ko-fi.com/pockettoyed, and that is not required or anything, but that will go directly back into the show. We are also on Twitch. What's our schedule for Twitch? It's when we can. So usually on Tuesdays, but, you know, the world's on fire and our bodies are on fire. So mm-hmm. Sometimes we're not on there.
Yeah.
But that, I think, kind of covers everything. Jordan, what have you been playing?
Oh, that's a good question, Addison. Since we last recorded, my hands have started being bad again. Which, fun fact, I learned is another side effect of my condition, because I can't eat a lot of stuff that people usually eat that like helps with inflammation. My hands get inflamed a lot, which sucks. So I haven't been playing a lot. I've been like watching more stuff, but I did take a couple breaks here or there just to play a few minutes of something so I wouldn't go nuts. I played some Tetris Rosie Retrospection for the Game Boy. It's a ROM hack. If you haven't seen it, it's like the best Tetris ROM hack ever. It basically just takes the original Game Boy Tetris and updates the rule set to where it plays exactly like modern Tetris games. And it's great. And also the pieces, like, it runs at a higher frame rate, I think, and everything doesn't feel as like jerky and jumpy. So I played some Tetris. And then I also played, this week I found a copy of Bomberman Max for the Game Boy Color for like really cheap. Actually, I think it was a couple weeks ago, but I hadn't played it. And so I played a little bit of that this week, and I sure do like those Bomberman games. This one's very hard, very hard though. If you're looking for a cheap one though, it is one of the cheaper ones to grab. So Bomberman Max for the Game Boy Color. There's like two versions. You can get like the blue or red version because they were doing a Pokemon thing back then. And I have the blue one, which is where you play as Bomberman, because I don't want to play as this Max guy. But, you know, whatever. It's fun.
Did anyone get close to really pulling off the multiple versions thing other than Pokemon? Like, I remember that some of the Mega Man Battle Network games were doing that. Did one of the Yo-Kai Watch games do that?
I'm not sure. It's like,
I don't know. I only played the first one.
I feel like most, actually, I would say Oracle of Ages and Seasons did it really well.
I guess, but I feel like those are almost like, I don't know. It's just so different on that. It almost feels like two different games that just came out at the same time.
Yeah, you kind of have to either do that or like be willing to take a big cut in content from like your other game, which I feel like most people weren't really willing to do, understandably. It's also like you had to have, it's kind of a bullshit marketing move, and you kind of, your thing has to be incredibly popular already or it doesn't really work, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole reason it started was just because they really wanted to get people using the link cable and doing trading on Pokemon. Like, I don't think that it necessarily was a marketing thing of like, we'll sell twice as many. I think it was just like, we want to sell the link cable and we want people to like be talking about this a lot and doing trades and that kind of thing.
I guess with like Oracle of Ages and Seasons, it really was like, oh, we do want people to buy both because then you get like the whole experience. And that's kind of what the Bomberman Max games do as well. I believe that like the blue and red versions have completely different stages and enemies and things. And then once you complete both games, you unlock the final, like, you know, levels or whatever, the real ending. I think they kind of do more the Oracle of Ages and Seasons thing. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like when games do versions. Just put it all in one game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I get why they used to. It was like kind of like DLC or something back in the day.
Yeah, I think it's fine for Pokemon, but other than that, yeah. Sorry, I kind of derailed you, though.
No, it's fine.
Is there anything else?
Yeah, so I almost forgot to mention this, but one night I was just like, my hands really hurt, and I'm sad, and I just want to play something that makes me happy and that I love. So I just booted up Streets of Rage 4, and I just turned on like arcade mode, which is like you only get one credit, and I was like, yeah, I'll just play arcade mode till I die, and then I beat it.
Nice.
And I one credit cleared Streets of Rage 4 by accident. It was pretty awesome.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I was playing on normal and I usually play on like very hard or something, so it kind of makes sense. I was just like, I can do this. I can totally do this. And I was like down to like my last sliver of health by the end, but if I had died on that final boss after that hole, I would have been so angry.
My God. That would be very frustrating.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. That game's great. Streets of Rage 4 is still a very good game. And now I kind of want to like unlock all the special moves because you kind of have to grind it out in like that roguelike mode. But like, whatever. It's still really fun to play. So it's just cool to see what they did with all those alternate move sets and things. I also booted up the Triangle Strategy demo. I've been really wanting to play that game. And I was hoping something turn-based would like rest my hands a little bit better. And that game's kind of like it's a turn-based strategy game. It's sort of...
From what I understand, there's a lot of reading in that one, like for a JRPG.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it takes a lot after like Final Fantasy Tactics and just kind of like Vagrant Story and those kinds of games where there's a lot of lore and politics and things going on. As far like behind the scenes, but I'd say the gameplay actually is a little different. It takes a little bit more away from like, I would say like Vagrant Hearts. Is that what that's called?
Mm-hmm.
Not Vagrant. Is it Vandal Hearts? Vandal Hearts. It takes a little more away from like Vandal Hearts, where like your party is made up of actual individual characters rather than like a bunch of units you just like customize that are kind of generic units. But there's some cool systems in place. There's a lot of stuff with like, you know, like how high up you are in the terrain versus how low you are. There's stuff about like, you know, this specific thing works better against this other specific thing. And it's a good game. I like it a lot. I don't like that English voice acting. It's bad. I was genuinely like shocked. I was like, this is like some of the worst I've heard in a long time. It's like, there's one guy, he's like, what is he? I don't know. He's kind of like one of your, he's like your initial party member. Like the male character's initial party member. He's kind of like a butler or something. I don't know. And he uses like a cane sword, and like that dude's performances are just like completely monotone. Like, it sounds like he's like trying to be a robot. It's crazy. So I quickly switched on the Japanese voices.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
I mean, if I hadn't, I would have genuinely considered just turning the voice acting off. It was that rough. But you know, some people may not mind it that much, but man, usually I'm one of those folks who's just kind of like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, like in Rune Factory 5, you didn't like the voice acting, but I was like, I can deal with it, whatever. In this game, though, I was like, oof, this has taken me right out of the experience. So, anyway. But yeah, I'm like in Triangle Strategy so far. I'm hoping I can pick that up or find the time to play that at some point. It seems like my jam. It's a good game.
Cool.
Yep. What about you? What have you been playing?
I have really just adopted the attitude of, I'm just going to play whatever I want. And like, are there things I should be focusing on? Yeah, probably. But this week, I have just really just kind of done whatever. Mm-hmm. So I have picked up Dragon's Dogma Arisen. I played a little bit of that, just picking dudes up with my ugly character I've made and mm-hmm. just chucking them and getting on the backs of big ugly snake monsters and stabbing them in the face. And that's a good time. That game is like if I could have more fun with a Elder Scrolls game like crossed with a Monster Hunter. It's a good time.
Nice.
They also had Resident Evil 4 at the lowest price I'd seen it on the eShop, and I had kind of been wanting to play that, so I grabbed that, and I've spent a good amount of time with that, honestly, this week. I'm just, like, after that first, like, actual major boss with the Plagueis, like, lake monster.
Oh, nice.
Where you have to, like, chuck the spears into it.
Which version are you playing? Like, which port are you playing?
Oh, I'm playing the Switch version.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. I've been curious how that HD remaster holds up.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it on like GameCube or PS2, but I don't feel like this Switch version looks very different.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's a pretty good looking game for like a GameCube game.
Yeah, it still looks pretty damn good. It's kind of insane.
Yeah. And it still controls really well. It really is one of the best games ever made. Mm-hmm. And so I've been having a fun time going through that. It's interesting to kind of see what I do remember and what I don't remember. Cause I'll remember like, oh, there's a treasure over here. Or I'll like forget that, oh, right, there was a snake in this box. Or just like little things like that. And so, yeah, I'm probably, I don't know, somewhere between like a third and a quarter of the way through. Mm-hmm. But it's been fun. I just kind of sit down, play through a chapter, and then turn it off and do something else.
It's a pretty cozy game. I mean, once some of the castles...
It's funny to think of that game as a cozy game.
Yeah.
Because, like, you get your head cut off with a chainsaw, but... Like, yeah, it is a cozy game. It's just like one of those games that I've played multiple times and like spent so much time with. I'm just like, yes, this reminds me of a better time. And it's cozy, despite the fact that I just exploded that lady's head with a shotgun.
For people who were 16 in 2004, it's a cozy game because we've all played
yes.
it 100 times.
I think I've probably told this story before, but I remember going to buy that game, and I was at the mall by myself, went to our Babbage's, and there was a new guy working. And I've definitely told Babbage's stories before, but for context, the Babbage's guys all knew me because me and my best friend were in there all the time.
They knew both of us independently, which is really weird to think about, that we were both like the weird young kids that they always knew.
But they were always very, very kind and very nice, and they were good guys. I mean, hopefully they're still good guys. I don't know. I haven't talked to most of them in a long time. But yeah, so there was a new guy in there, and I brought Resident Evil 4 up to the counter, and he's like, "Are you 18?" I was like, "No." And he's like, "Can't sell it to you." I was like, "Yeah, you can." And he was just like, "No, I can't." And one of the guys that did know me was working, and I was like, "Hey, Dave, tell him to sell me Resident Evil 4. And he was like, "Yeah, it's fine. Just sell it to him." And he's just like, "But," and he's like, "Nah, just sell it to him. It's fine. I know his mom. She doesn't care." And the guy just seemed very confused. But yeah, then I played Resident Evil 4. It was a good ass game.
Nice.
And then I don't know. I've got like some other main things to talk about, but that's kind of the main stuff I've been playing. I haven't gone back to Judgment. I need to. I don't want that to be one of those games that I accidentally abandon, especially because I need to keep that story fresh in my head. I do remember the other game. Maybe a little controversial, but we don't have to get into that because that conversation's been had a million times. I've been playing Diablo Immortal.
Nice. Wait. And what is that?
Diablo Immortal?
I thought you said Diablo. Something else. What is Diablo Immortal?
Diablo Immortal is a new free-to-play Diablo mobile game.
Okay.
But they also put it out on PC. So it's a free-to-play Diablo mobile game, and I have been playing it on my phone, my iPad, and I've also tried the PC version because I have a PC one. And I'm going to try real hard to not spend any money on it because that makes me feel a little bit better about playing it. But I have been super, super impressed with this game. They have done a really good job at translating the Diablo experience to a touchscreen, and it just feels like kind of like playing Diablo 3.
Nice.
And like the teaming up party system stuff works really well. The only thing is like it is very much a free to play game, and so they are kind of bombarding you with several currencies and like giving you notifications like, "Hey, there's a bundle available in the shop if you want to give us like $5." And it has a battle pass because it's a video game in 2022. But so far, you know, without engaging with any of that stuff, I haven't felt like I've been missing out. Maybe that'll change after playing it for a while. Maybe that's like the strategy of like, well, you know, once you sink a certain amount of time in, you'll feel like you have to spend money. But I don't know. So far, I haven't felt the need to. And I was thinking about that just now, about what I said about all the currencies, because I've also played some Diablo 3 with some people last night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are multiple different kind of currencies in Diablo 3 as well, because you like dust equipment and you get like, you know, salvaged metal and enchanted dust and things like that. So I guess that's like not that different from a fully featured release of Diablo. But yeah, I don't really know what's going on in the story because it's a Diablo story and who cares. I know some people do care, and I don't mean any disrespect. I just like have never been able to give a shit about a Diablo story.
I bet the lore is like super cool. I just wish that
It probably is. Yeah. It's like probably, I bet it's like really similar to like the Doom lore.
Yeah,
of just like demons. Gotta kill them all.
Gotta kill the demons.
Deckard Cain, he's here. Just like, yeah, give me a new wand. I don't know. I will say the PC version is they list it as like being in beta, but it is just like the mobile version just on PC. Like, they changed the UI up a little bit, but it is, it's just the mobile version there on your computer. which, like, is fine. I think one of my biggest complaints, though, is I hate seeing the world chat, and I want to turn it off, and I have not been able to
look at it.
It's always just down in the bottom middle, and there's like always like bots like spamming links to websites, and I'm just like, God, this sucks. It's like people being like, Morbin time, just like, God, please. I don't need to see you guys arguing about whose mom is like the stupidest while I'm killing these demons. It's taking me out of this. So if anyone knows how to turn that off, please tell me, because I have looked. But yeah, I've been having a really good time with that game, and nice. It's been a big surprise. So I guess we'll go ahead and get into like review kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'll start off with doing my kind of playdate games I wanted to talk about, if that's okay, or do you want to talk about something first?
No, let's talk about the playdate stuff. I kind of like doing that before the big reviews.
So, heads up, spoilers for week two of the playdate season. If you care, just skip ahead about 10 minutes or so. So in week two, you get Boogie Loops and you get Crankin' a Time Travel Adventure, Crankin' Presents a Time Travel Adventure. Boogie Loops is basically kind of like a little music sequencer thing with like cute little anthropomorphic animals and pizza. And I think one of them is a banana or a Twinkie or something.
Great.
And Boogie Loops, honestly, it might be like super, super cool for some people, but it's been kind of like the one I've touched the least of all of my Playdate games so far. Just because, I don't know, it's not, not my thing. And it's a lot crammed into a very small screen. And so it's hard to kind of tell what you're doing or read. Crankin' and presents a Time Travel Adventure. That is the one that was kind of shown off with the playdate at it's like big unveiling. It is made by Keita Takahashi, among some other people, but he's like the main name there. If you're not familiar, he did Nobi Nobi Boy and Katamari Damacy and Wadum. And so in this game, you are using the crank to forward and rewind time, and so you have to do that to get the robot on time to his date, but he's always late no matter what you do, and like you have to rewind time so that you're bending over to not get stung by a bee, or so that you're jumping over a pig that's running by, things like that. It starts off super easy and simple, and man, they crank up that difficulty real fast. But I'm having a great time with that one. That's been super, super cool. So I also want to talk about a couple just sideload games. Like we've mentioned before, you can just grab a game off Itch and then sideload it onto the Playdate in a very simple fashion.
And I've been watching that Playdate like tag, and there's like new stuff every single
constantly. Like, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
Yeah. While I was waiting for us to get started, I was looking on Itch and I just opened up a bunch of games and like other tabs that I'm going to check out. The first one that I want to talk about is Sketch Share Solve.
Yeah.
And this is a very special game to us because it's made by one of our listeners, RDK. And so this is it's also a very special game for us because it is a Picross game, and a bunch of us are big Picross fans. So I want to say thank you so much, RDK. I don't know if you, I can't remember if you've put your actual name out there or not. So I'll just keep saying RDK. Yeah. But thank you so much for making a Picross game. I can't believe I had a Picross game available when I got my playdate. That rules. I really enjoy Sketch Share Solve. It is, just a very well put together Picross game for the Playdate. It is available at a pay what you want, but I highly recommend throwing her some money because she has worked hard on this and she is still putting out updates for it, which is great.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
And version, so you can also
version 1.3 just came out a day ago. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She's still putting in work on it. You can also like sketch out your own Picross puzzles and, you can share those. It is a little bit convoluted to get other people's Picross puzzles onto your Playdate, but I mean, that's just kind of a limitation of the hardware.
Yeah.
There's not really a better way to do it.
It'd be neat if the Playdate had some kind of online like Wi-Fi functionality for like multiplayer stuff.
Yeah. Maybe on the next one.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'm just impressed that she like came up with a method to do that. That's really cool. But yeah, SketchShare Solve might be the game I've spent the most time with on my Playdate.
Oh, wow.
I don't really have a good way to check how long I've spent on each game on here, but I know I've spent a lot of time on that one because I'm a big Picross pervert and, it's a good Picross. You can, also make your own profile and have like a little picture for it and stuff. And I don't know. It's a nice game and I'm happy that I have it on my Playdate. It's one of those games that's just great to just bust out whenever. Another game that is kind of similar to that, that is just nice to bust out whenever, is Playtris, which is a Tetris clone for the Playdate. And I think that it is also pay what you want. Don't quote me on that.
I think it's just free because last time I saw it anyway.
But it was on a forum
somewhere, so who knows?
I'm pretty sure it is, but I think like you have the option to throw the developer a tip.
Yeah.
Which obviously we always suggest doing.
Yeah.
But Playtris, just a really well put together Tetris clone. And for something like the Playdate that you can just easily throw in a bag and just have with you like all the time. And having, the very DMG-esque kind of screen, having a Tetris clone kind of seems essential. And, this is a pretty well put together one of those. So it doesn't have like a whole lot of game modes or anything. It's just kind of like jump in and play. It's just always kind of a marathon mode, but it keeps track of your high scores. It does have a hold function. But due to kind of like the limitations on the Playdate, you have to press A and B together to do the hold, which is like, maybe not ideal. I would like to see them do like a update where maybe you could do a different button combination. Like maybe holding B and hitting left or something. I don't know. But I do really enjoy Playtris. I've spent a lot of time on that. And yeah, so those are my Playdate games. I also was going to talk to you guys today about Fishing Paradiso.
I'm very excited and to hear fishing about this game because I was the one who was initially interested in playing it, but then when we got it, I was like, I feel like I should send this to Addison because he'd probably enjoy it.
Yes. Fishing Paradiso, it is available on the eShop for $14.99. I believe it may be on sale right now, but I cannot guarantee that it still will be by the time you hear this. It comes to us from publisher Odin Cat. We want to say thank you to OdenCat for sending us a review code. I don't actually have a developer listed, so I'm thinking the developer is also OdenCat.
I'm not sure.
Fishing Paradiso is a game that reminded me a lot of Spiritfarer because you just start the game off and you're dead, but you're in heaven. And what do you do in heaven? Well, you fish, of course. So basically what this game consists of is a few mechanics that you're going to be doing kind of over and over again. The main one obviously being fishing, and you will be given different quests related to fishing by the different residents of heaven that you'll meet. So you might meet someone and they want you to get four of one fish because they need it for, I don't know, some reason. And so you'll have like a series of quests and you can just kind of knock them out one at a time, or you can like, you know, log a bunch of quests and then go to the different islands and catch the fish that you need. And when you're on the islands, it'll highlight which fish are the ones that you need. And so if they're not like highlighted, you can still catch that fish, but you'll just know that it's not going towards any of your quests.
Oh, okay.
And so as you complete those quests, you'll get like experience to go towards leveling up your fishing skills, but then also you are kind of building a bond with these residents of heaven. And so as you do that, you'll kind of unlock their stories, which, you know, that's kind of how Spiritfarer was, more or less. But the difference is, in Fishing Paradiso, while I enjoy the characters and like the stories are interesting, it's just nowhere near as deep or well written as something like Spiritfarer. So they're like there, but it's nothing that has really kind of like grabbed me and, you know, like kind of touched me or anything like that. But that's okay. That doesn't have to be like that in every single game.
Yeah.
Because the main mechanic here, again, is fishing. And so, like, there's a ton of different fish for you to catch and a lot of quests to kind of knock off. And then you start unlocking more islands and more potential fish to catch. And all of the time while you're doing this, you're also gaining different things that you can put in your little cabin. So you also have like a variety of items that you can decorate your cabin with, which there's not a ton of purpose to that, but it is just kind of fun to, you know, play house.
Yes. If you got a nice, wholesome little fishing game, yeah, let me decorate stuff. That's a great way to get me invested.
Yes. There's also, as part of the mechanic of learning more about the different residents of heaven, you will talk with this bear who's a chef, and he'll give you different recipes. And so, you know, maybe this recipe calls for three of this fish and two of this one or something. And once you get that, then you'll unlock a new little story segment. And so you'll have the bear cook that recipe, and then you'll eat that with one of the residents and kind of learn some more about them and just have like this kind of cute moment.
That's cool.
I guess I should kind of explain how the fishing works.
Yeah, that's the thing I was most interested in, because one of the things you told me about this when you first started playing it was that you didn't think it was like the best game ever, or like, or you didn't think there was much going on, but you like couldn't stop playing it. And so it's like...
And that's kind of how I still feel about it.
it must have a pretty satisfying loop then, at the very least.
It is a satisfying loop. It's just that the game overall feels a little more shallow than I would have liked. But it still kind of hooked me, no pun intended. And I just kind of kept coming back. But with the fishing mechanic in this, you will... you know, cast out, and then you'll get a little exclamation point to hit A to hook the fish, and then you will just have to hold A to reel it in, but you want to, you know, make sure you're watching the tension so you don't break your line, which is pretty similar to something like the Stardew Valley fishing, which, I mean, there's only so many ways to do fishing mechanics, and I think that's the way I would have done it as well. It works well, and like you said, it is a very kind of rewarding, fulfilling gameplay loop. It's got a nice kind of, I don't know, would you call that 16-bit art style?
Yeah, kind of. It's got that Game Boy Advance look to it.
Yeah, it's like somewhere between 16, 32-bit.
Yeah.
And like, it's got some well-designed little characters and creatures and stuff, and it's a very cute game. I would just say that this is a fun little fishing game with a cute story and enough going on here to really kind of keep you going for a while.
Yeah.
Definitely enough to kind of get your money's worth. I would give it a buy it. I had a good time with it. I enjoy the loop of crossing off those quests and then leveling up your skills and getting just kind of overpowered at fishing and then,
yeah,
you know, taking your friends out to a little meal made by a bear. It's nice.
This is why I think the fishing genre works really well with like RPG elements too. Cause it's just you get to constantly keep discovering new little things, but then also like as you progress and get stronger, like find new areas and everything, it just feels really nice. And I like that we're starting to see more fishing games these days, because I've kind of been getting into them lately.
Something else that I should mention about the game, it's also available on Android and maybe the App Store. I'm not sure. And I know that it's free on there. So I haven't been able to play the mobile version. So I'm kind of curious what the difference is between the paid version and...
I'm curious how much they make you wait or how much they make you pay for certain stuff on mobile.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like one of those things where you play like X amount of the game for free and then it's like, hey, to see the rest of this, you know, pay us $10 or whatever.
I think the one for Switch is called, is it Fishing Paradiso Complete Edition?
No, Fishing Paradiso.
On the Odin Cat website, they call this version Fishing Paradiso Complete Edition.
On the eShop, it's just called Fishing Paradiso.
Yeah, I can see that. But it's I'm guessing it just kind of, they've restructured it to be a premium experience, which...
And it looks like it is also on Steam as well, which
I
did not know.
Man, I want to play this game. It looks fun and nice and simple.
It is very nice and simple. It's just a relaxing time.
Genre, tropical fishing RPG. Yeah, those are like my three activation words.
So once again, that was Fishing Paradiso from developer-publisher Odin Cat, available on the eShop and on Steam and the Google Play Store. It is $14.99 on Steam and the eShop, free on the Google Play Store, although cannot confirm, but I imagine there is some sort of limitation to that.
Yeah,
sure. But yeah, it is available now, and I would give it a buy it.
Nice. Looks like it's also on iOS as well. I just confirmed.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. All right. Well, I guess that just leaves my review, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you have for us today?
Well, this one has been a long time coming, and I'm very excited to talk about it. I'm reviewing Citizen Sleeper for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yes.
So Citizen Sleeper is kind of an RPG with some visual novel elements to it, I would say. It is available on the PC, Mac, Switch, and Xbox. It is $19.99, at least on the Switch. I'm sure that's what it is elsewhere as well. And it comes to us from publisher Fellow Traveler and developer Jump Over the Age, which is a single developer named Gareth Damian Martin. But I don't know. I know they have like a composer and some other things, but I'm not sure exactly sure who all else was involved in this. But I know it is largely a solo effort from this person who also made a game called, I'm not sure if you remember this one or not. It came out a while back called In Other Waters. It was an interplanetary like diving game that was mostly all menu driven, where it looked like you were in like a submarine, just kind of like messing with all the little dials and buttons and everything. But it had it had this really awesome like kind of like three or four tone art style that looked very minimalistic, but just it was animated very nicely. And I think that this making a game like Citizen Sleeper in the RPG genre is like a perfect progression of this person's aesthetic, because even though Citizen Sleeper is an RPG, it is largely menu driven, but damn, those menus, they do be looking good. They would be looking very, very good. And so does the art in this game as well, like the character art, which was done by, oh man, I'm going to mispronounce this, Guillaume Singlin. I think that's how you pronounce it. They are one of my favorite artists, but I've never had to say their name out loud before. So, and you can find them on Twitter at GUI Noir, GUINOIR. And they are like one of my favorite artists working right now, and have done some other work with like different like Switch icons and things that we've seen. But this is the first time, this is the first game I've seen that that features their art that's out. There's a couple more that are coming out. But that's out that I can think of that has their art in it. And they just have this really cool art style that's like, that feels very, well, it fits this game a lot because this game is a cyberpunk RPG, and it just kind of has this very lived in kind of grimy world to it. And I don't want to spoil the story too much. I really don't want to, which is hard to do because to sell you on this game, it's like the story is the big driving factor.
Yeah.
But it's, I also think it's best to go into it kind of blind, but I will just to set it up for you. You play as this character who is a cyborg, we'll say, called a sleeper. And they're a different kind of cyborg in that they have a human consciousness put into a robot body, but the body of like the human body is still somewhere else, like in cryo freeze, like somewhere else. And so like, this body that you have, this robotic body, essentially belongs to a corporation, and you have escaped from that corporation and fled to this kind of space station, this like colony that you are going to have to live on and find a way to survive on. And so the general progression of the game is you have to keep moving and make money and find shelter. And also there's, you know, a lot of timers in this game of things that are counting down and problems that are going to come up for you later in the story. And so you have to kind of balance, like, where are you going to invest your time? Where are you going to invest your money? And it kind of winds up feeling a lot like something like Persona 3 or 4 or 5, that more like the school elements of those. I would say, like, if I were to compare this to what were you saying? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're saying a lot of things that make me want to play this.
If I were to compare it to like one Persona entry, I'd say like Persona 3 Portable, because, you know, it does have a bit more of that visual novel element where you're sort of moving around a map and selecting different locations rather than like running around on foot exploring the city. But what's amazing is like that has, you know, it's a really good use of resources, you know, as a developer, because it basically allows the story to have this enormous scale, but they don't have to constantly like model an entire city, you know, like make a cyberpunk 2077 essentially. But I think this tells a far more compelling story than a cyberpunk 2077, and one that has a lot more choices to it, because like, even though it's a pretty short game, you can finish it in around like 6 or 7 hours. Like there's so many things that you can even miss, you know, like story paths that you don't take. There's multiple ways to end the game. And there's also like different ways that you can interact with a certain character. You know, there's tons of different characters, but like, you know, I'm saying that like within those relationships, there will be multiple ways that that relationship kind of shakes out depending on what your choices are. There's like people, like you can be really good friends with someone, or like maybe this relationship, like, oh shit, you learn some stuff about them and you're like, I'm not cool with you anymore. And it just kind of falls apart. There's all kinds of stuff. It's really cool.
So it seems like, if I'm kind of hearing you right, that this is a game that's definitely worth playing through multiple times to kind of pick up on things and different routes and things that you may have missed initially.
I definitely think so. I immediately started my second playthrough right after I finished my first playthrough. And, you know, I picked a different class. There's like 3 classes you can choose from. Not that they matter like a ton, because you can basically gain the skills of any class depending on where you put your like points at. It just kind of decides like the early on in the game what options are open to you. And so like, yeah, I just picked a different class, and I was like, okay, I'm going to actually make the opposite choices for all the people that I've interacted with. And then I'm going to kind of really focus my attention in the places I really didn't spend too much time in the first time around. Because there's all kinds of shit in this game, man. Okay, so let's get into, like, what you actually do, because that'll help people kind of understand, I think, like, what the progression is like. So in this game, like I said, you got this big map, and you wake up, and you can choose to, you know, go to these different locations or talk to these different characters. And every day, you have, I believe it is six, the max amount you can have are six dice, all right? And they are... they kind of roll every day. So you have like these six numbers and you can spend these numbers. This is hard to explain. So this is where some of the tabletop RPG stuff comes in. So essentially, let's say that today you need to make some money. So you go to work at the scrapyard. So you go to the scrapyard and you can choose one of multiple jobs. When you choose a job, you spend one of your dice for that day to basically like take a chance to see how you do at your job. Does that make sense? So it's like,
yeah, it's like a D&D kind of system of of skill roles. Like, are there modifiers being applied?
So modifiers would be like your skills that you have leveled up with. So like, let's say you've leveled up a character. They're just kind of more direct and they're more of like a physical based character. So like maybe there's one of the jobs you can take is like hauling scrap. Well, you get a +1 to whatever dice roll you use on that job.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
The only difference is that you're not actually rolling the dice when you choose this action. So those numbers that you start each day with, they are pre-rolled. So you could have like a 2, a 4, a 6, a 3, and then, you know, or maybe it's all sixes. I've never had that happen, but, you know, you could. And so when you spend the six, like let's say you spend a 6, you have a 100% positive outcome. But if you use like a 4 on this job, you know, maybe it's like there's like a 50% chance that something might go wrong, right? Or actually, that'd be less. It's like if you spent like a 3, I think that a 2 or a 3, you have a 50% chance of getting a negative outcome. And some jobs too, like let's say there's some jobs, if you're doing it and you get a negative outcome, if you screw up like 3 times, they don't let you work there anymore, right? So you've really got to like choose like, you know, wisely how you want to spend your points and where you want to focus, you know, your relationships and your work and your time at. Now, okay, so I hope that I've explained that okay. There's another system in place where you have an energy bar that decreases every day. Every time you go to bed, it decreases. And as this, and this energy bar is right underneath another bar, which is basically like your health, okay? So the energy bar, the energy bar, like you spend it when you do actions. So if you go and work somewhere, you lose like 2 of your energy bar, right? So you have to keep that up by eating. And eating costs money. But the other thing is, your health bar, it is always decreasing because there's a story element reason for why that's happening. But your health bar is always decreasing. And as it decreases, you start the day with less and less dice to use. So if it's like halfway, you only have 3 actions you can take that day. So like,
okay, so it's so you made like Persona... comparisons. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like how you only have so many choices as to what you can do during your after school time, kind of similar to that. Like you have to choose where you're going to put that energy towards.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so like, and where you put that energy towards will open up new characters for you to talk to, relationships to build, and possible, like solutions to the problems that you're trying to address. Like you've got a giant evil cyberpunk futuristic corporation after you. So there are multiple bad things that can happen. And so like, as you try to, you know, evade capture, keep yourself alive, and lots of other things, it's like there's timers always ticking down. Like you need to do this thing by this time or this plot branch will end, or you need to do this thing by this time, or you don't know what's going to happen, you know? And so there's like, you know, and there's like crime syndicates and all kinds of stuff going on in this game. So, it's God. And okay. So, you know, I'm talking so much about the gameplay. I'm probably making it, we do this thing on this show where we make games sound more complicated than they are. Look, it's like a tabletop RPG smashed together with like, you know, an RPG like Persona where you can go around, explore, you know, build relationships and do tasks. And eventually as you solve plot threads, you gain skill points to actually add to your skill repertoire, which will open up the opportunities to do other plot points, which is pretty cool. And it's a very addicting game loop and the gameplay is great. I love it. But I think that if it didn't have everything else that's going on around it, if everything that was around it wasn't as solid as it is, you know, I don't even know if it would be as satisfying. And so let's talk about that stuff for a while. First of all, the writing in this game, holy shit. Like, some of the best writing I've, like, ever seen in a video game, period. It's amazing. The story in this game is fantastic. The characters are fantastic. The way it describes the environments that you're in. And that part of it also feels very tabletop RPG, right? There's a thing happening. And, mm-hmm. and you can't actually see, you know, exactly what the environment that you're in looks like. And so all of that is done through the writing. And at first I was like, do I want to play a game that feels like reading a book? But it really didn't. It was just like, that's the way that the story is told. That's the way that the exploration works, is it says it does it through text. You know, it reminds me of Crimson Shroud in that way.
Okay. That was kind of my main concern, was that it would be too much like reading a book and I would just, you know, not get into it or something.
No, yeah. And I think that when you're immersed in the world, it doesn't feel like that. And that's why, like I said, everything that's around this game, that surrounds the gameplay itself, is what ties this all together. When I first started playing this, I made the accidentally very wise decision to play it with headphones on, like noise-canceling headphones on. And man, I'll tell you, the sound, this has some of the best sound design I've heard in years, and an incredible, incredible, like, lo-fi chill soundtrack that has like a little synth going on, but, you know, just like some of that chiller stuff from like Blade Runner, where you've got like synth mixed together with, you know, like this chill vibe. I guess Blade Runner has like more sax and more like some jazz things going on. This doesn't really have that as so much, but God, like, you know, you could make FTL comparisons. I don't know. It's fantastic. You can probably picture it. Even if you don't play this game, please just go listen to the soundtrack. It is incredible. It's composed by a guy named Amos Roddy, and he's done some other work as well. It's really, really good. But this game really pulled me in with its soundscape, and I want to make sure I really point that out as much as I do the art style and the writing, because I think that all three of those together just tie this together so well. And also just like the menus and stuff are really beautiful. Like just navigating these menus and going through, it's like that could easily be really boring. But why is that not boring in like a Persona 3 portable? Because it all looks gorgeous, right? And here that applies as well. The game looks really, really beautiful. And yeah, just that, like that sound design, like when you've got headphones on and you're like sitting there and you're like reading this text or whatever, and you're just like, you know, going about and doing your chores and stuff, like it dynamically changes. Like you'll hear in your headphones too, like the sounds the city, and you'll hear like hover cars passing by, like from like in front of you to behind you. It's wild. Like, I don't know. It's just, the sound design's really good, and I really can't recommend that you play this with headphones, you know, more than I really can't recommend it enough. Like playing with headphones is just like an entirely different experience. But also, I mean, it also looks great on your TV. And I will say that like on the Switch version, there was like maybe a little performance problems, but like those are only when you're like scrolling the map, because there's really not that many like elements that can, you know, that can cause performance issues. It's like very much a visual novel style looking game. But like the city is all rendered in 3D, like, and it's kind of an above view. So sometimes when you're scrolling the map looking for like a thing, you get some frame stuttering or whatever.
Okay.
It's not that big of a deal, but
you know, yeah, whatever. It's just like enough that you kind of notice it sometimes.
Yeah, you notice it. It is a Switch game. It happens in a lot of Switch games. So, but speaking of like a couple things that I had issues with, there is a really long like initial loading time, but it's just when you first like initially boot up the game. But yeah, there's like I'd say maybe like 30 seconds to a minute, but then there really aren't any loading times after that. So,
okay. Yeah. I never mind that. I kind of prefer that if that's a possible route to take.
I will also say that I ran into like a couple of glitches. I think there was one where I was like trying to click on something, or I was trying to scroll the map, and it was just like, no, you can't do that anymore. I was like, okay. But fortunately, it has like a really, really like actually a really aggressive autosave system, to the point to where like you cannot cheat this game. If you make a decision you don't like, you are locked into it. But you know, I like that a lot too. It makes it feel more natural. But any glitch I ran into was fine once I restarted the game, or just like exited out of the game and booted it back up. So, yeah, man, what a freaking great game. I should mention too, when I first saw Citizen Sleeper, I was like, oh, this isn't for me. I don't really think I want to, I don't really know if this is for me. You know, and then like our friend Spencer, kind of pushed me into reviewing it, because apparently, I guess he is working for the publisher now, and he was like, hey, you need to check this out. And I was like, all right, fine. And I started playing it, and I'll tell you, man, like I was, up until the moment I entered that first paragraph scrolled on screen, I was like, I don't know if this is my thing. I just don't know. And then as soon as I started playing this game, I was like, this is very much my thing. And I think I played it for like 3 hours that first night.
That's like almost half the game.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, for sure. Man, it's extremely good.
That's definitely high up on my watch list I gotta grab it at some point.
Yeah,
there's just too much going on.
When you told me about playing, when you told me about playing Bloom on your playdate and the kind of the structure around that game, I was like, oh, you would very much like this game then. It's like 100%, because it's kind of similar in that way where you're like, you know, it's like story driven and there's like lots of dialogue, but it's like, you know, kind of based on like what you're doing day to day. The way you were describing Bloom to me, I haven't played Bloom myself, but the way you were describing it to me, I was like, okay, if you like that, you're going to love this, because it just kind of has that same kind of vibe.
I have a Bloom-shaped hole in my heart right now, too, because I've finished it. And
yeah.
Oh, boy.
I was going to say there's no...
You want to play this?
I was going to say there's no farming in this game, and then I remembered, oh, wait, there is at one point. I mean, it's not like, you know, like Harvest Moon or something, but there is like you can get to... There's an area you can get to like farm some stuff. You know, even though it's all done through menus, man, but yeah, just the way this game, way everything ties together, the way that like the art ties into like the music, ties into the world design and the writing, ties into like the dice system and the ticking clock system and the skills and drives and all the way all those things tie into to make this like really perfectly realized world that just feels way beyond like its budget, way beyond like being just like an indie game, into like, this is one of the best games I've played all decade. And I love it. And for me personally, like, I think it's shot up into my game of the year contenders list for sure. I have no issues recommending Citizen Sleeper. In fact, I would say it's an essential if you have a Nintendo Switch. Or if you're, you know, or wherever else, I think it's a game that everyone should give a shot, especially if you're an RPG fan. And the things that I've described sound like they could be up your alley. I think if it's potentially your thing, you should definitely give it a look. So I give Citizen Sleeper an essential.
Damn. All right.
Feels good to have that out there. I've been hanging on to that one for a while. So once again, that was Citizen Sleeper. It was $19.99. It is available now on the Nintendo Switch, the Xbox, the PC. We want to say thank you to publisher Fellow Traveler and developer Jump Over the Age for sending us a review code. Really enjoyed Citizen Sleeper. It's a pleasure to give it an essential. I think it's one of the best Switch games this year for sure. Go check it out.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, yeah. I'm very excited to dig into that at some point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is our games for the episode. But now we're going to kind of jump into some questions here. I'll kind of pull the curtain aside for a second and just say these questions might be a little bit dated. We started recording this episode and then... like always, our lives caught on fire, like literally in the middle of recording.
Is it okay if I say what happened?
Yeah, it is.
Addison's mom got mauled by a dog in the middle of our recording.
So, yeah, she's okay.
She's okay.
Her and her dog are okay. I had to go. It was a very, stressful and, scary few days, but
so yeah, it took us a little while to get back on the horse after that.
Yeah. And then other things have kind of happened, and it's just been 2022 continues to deliver. So all right, but the questions. Hopscotch Plus says, or I guess I should say asks, favorite of the new Pokemon professors, and if you have time, thoughts on the Gen 9 starters. I definitely prefer the lady professor.
I do as well, actually.
I don't remember their names, but
she likes something to study about the past. Big dinosaur mommy.
Something about that handsome dad professor. I was not a fan of the way that man looks.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like a, what's the term? Uncanny Valley almost.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I can totally see that.
His style just doesn't look like he should be a Pokemon character. Like, it's too realistic for a Pokemon character. I don't like it. As far as the starters go, though, I don't think they're quite as good as the Sword and Shield starters, but I like them all right. I like Toupee Duck. I think he's fun.
I like them a lot better than the Sword and Shield starters, actually. Well, really? Besides, I like the, there's Sobble, there was the Fire Bunny, and then who's the other one in Sword and Shield?
Grookey? Or was that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Grookey's really good, and so is the Bunny. I wasn't a big fan of Sobble. Yeah, they're okay. I don't know. I think concept-wise, like, the ones for Sword and Shield are better conceptually, but I think in execution, the ones from these two new games are more my jam. I'm like, oh, yeah,
yeah.
Cute little fire pig, right? No, not a pig.
I don't know what he is. He seems more of like an alligator or a dinosaur or something to me. Or maybe
Yeah.
Foy Coco is his name. Oh, yeah, it says Fire Croc Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Grass Cat, Sprigatito, and then the Toupee Duck.
Yeah, I like them a lot. To me, they also look like they're not going to peak early. Does that make sense? Like it looks like they have a lot of potential for cool evolved forms, which makes me excited.
Now that I'm looking at them some more, I like them more than I thought. I guess I'm not real big on Sprigatito because it just I don't know. It looks like we had an AI design a Pokemon.
Yeah.
And I don't know, something about it.
It has the eyes. The eyes are kind of weird. I wish the eyes were a little different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't know. I definitely don't think I'm going to go with the cat. I'll either go with Foy Coco or Toupee Duck.
I'm Foy Coco 100%. I mean, it's going to depend on the evolved forms. Obviously. Dude, I bet that Toupee Duck, if they give that freaking Toupee Duck, if they turn him into like a Boncho, I'd be so excited. Oh, holy shit.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I
didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or he gets a motorcycle. He's a greaser. That'd be great.
Hell yeah. Yunovan Joseph asks, if you could design a new Pokemon for Scarlet or Violet, what would you make? As much or little detail as your little heart's desire. Say the heart emoji out loud. Heart emoji. I mean, I would have to do a new Eevee evolution.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
I think, like, I mean, they I started to say they always, but they don't always come in pairs. But traditionally, they mostly have come in pairs. And so I would want, like, I think I'm trying to decide. I'm going to say a bug and ghost Eevee.
Oh, wow. That'd be wild.
I mean, like, EVs. So, like, one is a bug Eevee and one's a ghost Eevee.
Yeah.
And so, like, I mean, all Eevee evolutions look kind of like Eevee still. So, bug Eevee would just look like Eevee, but with, like, some, like, insect wings and some gross bug eyes. But also still be cute somehow. And ghost Eevee would be probably look kind of similar to Espeon, but be translucent and kind of, I don't know, like Casper meets an Eevee, I guess. I don't know. I'm just kind of pulling this out of my ass.
That sounds great. I would want to do like some new fossil Pokemon. I want to do whatever the new fossils are. I really want one designed after the new rendition of Spinosaurus that we have with like the fishtail and everything. I want
that
a big,
great.
underwater dinosaur that's a Spinosaurus, or like an amphibian Spinosaurus, and make him like...
Let me hit you with this.
What?
A Dimetrodon Pokemon.
Oh, fuck. That'd be dope. I don't know what he would do functionally, though. Like, I don't know. It's weird to me, though, that we don't have, like... I guess we do have a Triceratops. We don't have a Stegosaurus yet, though.
Oh, yeah, we don't. Brains asks, what's going to be this generation's Pokemon based on an inanimate object? In case you couldn't tell, these questions came in after the new Pokemon trailer.
Yeah.
They said, I'm going with a corkscrew.
I'm going to go with a video game controller. It's about time we had a gamer Pokemon.
Oh,
one for the gamers.
They should just make a Game Boy Pokemon that looks like the DMG, but great. It's like... kind of Rotom. Maybe it's just a new Rotom form,
and then it evolves into a Nintendo Switch.
Oh my gosh,
that would get dated so fast. Every generation they have to add a new evolution.
I don't know.
I just thought of such a good one. Holy shit, I got it. I'm sorry. Okay, so it's a camera, but it's like a ghost type. It's like a haunted, spooky camera. And it's like, it looks like an older
Fatal
camera.
Frame Pokemon.
Yeah, and you like, I don't know, it like captures your soul or something.
Think about having that in the next Pokemon Snap game.
That'd be dope. Hell yeah.
All right, I'm gonna pull you and say like a CRT Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
It would be like an electricity, but also... it would like shoot beams out of the screen, and like wires would come out of the back and like do like physical slashing attacks that way.
And it's just massive, and it's like the heaviest Pokemon on record.
Yeah. Yeah. It's heavier than Snorlax.
Yeah.
All right. We got another one from Unovan Joseph. They asked, you get to trade places with one video game character forever, a week, who cares? It's hypothetical. Who do you choose? Don't forget, you're trading places, so they will be assuming your life here while you assume theirs. That's scary.
Yeah, I've got a child. I don't want to leave. I have to.
Oh, man. But
okay, oh, well, so I guess Spyro the Dragon is raising my son. I'm just kidding.
The fact that it could potentially be forever... makes me want to make some bad decisions. Like, I'm like, hey, I love my family so much, but hey, I got this opportunity here, and I cannot be in this hellscape anymore. But I have to damn the prince of the cosmos to trade places with me.
And they're just like, no, he just rolls up your house, the whole family. All your pets.
That's honestly great. I would love to just like, it's just always been a dream ever since I was a little kid to just live in the Pokemon world.
Same.
So
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Going, you know, switching places with like the, you know, protagonist from Gen 2 or something, that would be great. But also just like living in one of my Animal Crossing villages for like a month as a vacation. That sounds nice. And I feel like my villager, since they are, you know, essentially me, they would take care of my house, and they would probably clean up. They would probably make me some money. So that seems like kind of a win-win on that one.
Yeah. It's a good call.
I kind of want to read this conversation that played out, but I will just say, if you're not in the Discord, you should be.
Wait. I need to go read that one.
Okay. So Bread or Cheese says, let's put those precognition skills to the test. Will there be a Nintendo Direct this week? They asked that wasn't. On the 10th, and it's the 14th now.
Yeah.
There has not been one. Don't think there's gonna be one, but I did see where Alana Pierce said that there will be a Nintendo Direct at the end of the month. Ooh. So we'll see. I'm pretty sure she's been right about other things that she's said.
She has.
I won't really put too much weight in it until like Emily Rogers or somebody confirms it.
Yeah. Emily Rogers today said that there's a new Fire Emblem game and it is completely finished.
So yes, and it's like a new mainline. It's not a remake.
Yeah, that's surprising.
And also, apparently, that the graphics are a step up from Three Houses.
Yeah, because they're working together with the folks who did the folks behind the Atelier series, and so which they've been able to do some pretty good visuals, especially for character models. Like, their environments are like okay, but their character models are always like gorgeous.
Also, apparently, it's going to have some sort of, like, summoning mechanic to summon past, like, heroes from other Fire Emblem games.
Yeah, that I don't know about, but whatever.
That's good. Looks like the rest of this is just people kind of just talking, so I think that's it on questions.
Talking in the questions section. Go back to general, you heathens.
All right, well, unless you've got anything else, I'm ready to wrap this up.
Let's wrap this shit up.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. And thank you for bearing with us. I know this is not the cleanest or most coherent episode, but, you know, life keeps happening. My dog is coughing. That's probably getting picked up. Sorry. but again, thank you for listening. We very much appreciate it. And hopefully things will just maybe calm down and get a little easier for everyone, and maybe we can get back on somewhat of a schedule.
You know, I'm not even going to say everyone, just for me in particular, just like for our family in particular.
I'd be fine with that. Things
would calm down.
That'd be great. That would be great.
Your family is a bonus. I would love to see your family calm down too. I don't know what's going on.
I don't either. But thanks for listening. Our intro music is Time Trials by Hyper Potions, and our outro music is Hut by the River by Sound Market. We want to say thank you to both of them for allowing us to use their music. Very much appreciate it. Go check them out. They have jams upon jams just waiting for you. And that is it. But you should, once again, go hang out in our Discord. I feel like it's been kind of steadily growing, and it's just maybe I'm more proud of it than the show at this point, because it's just a nice, wholesome place.
It does seem to make a more consistently positive impact on the world than the show itself, but it wouldn't exist without the show. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, they're one in the same in some ways, I guess. I don't know. Thanks for listening. We love you. We're going to make another one at some point.
Yeah, I promise. Soon. We will.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.